All right, thank you, everybody. Welcome. My name is Lauren Smith. I am a program officer at IIE working on the Europe and Eurasia region. A number of the countries that we'll talk about are in my portfolio. So I'm really excited to talk to you about some of these. And I've been at IIE for about 3 years, almost primarily on the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. And I'll be joined a little bit later by Martha Davis. She teaches constitutional law, U.S. human rights advocacy, and professional responsibility at Northeastern University in Boston. She held Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Human Rights and Humanitarian Law at Lund University from 2015 to 2016. And then in 2017-2018, she continues to work in Sweden on the Fulbright Specialist Award. The Fulbright Specialist Award, if you do have questions about that, that's not in this webinar. That's actually run out of World Learning, so not IIE. So Martha held both an IIE Administered Award and that World Learning Specialist Award. As we continue, feel free to write any questions in that chat box, and we'll get to them at the end. And then also, once Martha talks, you can have some questions for her, and she has the unique perspective of being in-country and can answer some of those, like what it's really like being a Fulbright scholar. So for the core Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, just a brief summary, supports teaching and research for 3 to 12 months in over 125 different countries. It's open to all sorts of people, faculty, administrators, professionals, and all disciplines. Of course, the discipline depends on each specific award description, but there's probably something for you in there. The application deadline this year, in the past, it was August 1st. That is no longer. It is now September 16th. So you have a little bit more time to get those letters of invitation. For example, Finland, one of the countries we're going to talk about, we do know that they closed for a lot of the summer. So that new deadline of September 16th can really help you get that letter of invitation once they reopen. So it really helps you. Moving on, so you must be a U.S. citizen. Fortunately, if you're in this webinar and you're looking to apply to the Fulbright program, the U.S. Scholar Program, you have to be a U.S. citizen. That is non-negotiable, unfortunately. So the degree is as required by award. Some awards require a terminal degree. The Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program does consider MBA, for example, to be a terminal degree. I think also sometimes master's in journalism we might just consider to be a terminal degree. So just reach out to us and we'll be able to help you with that. So many awards are open to applicants with a master's or with a lot of professional or academic experience. That really depends on each award, so read those award descriptions carefully. As for the waiting periods, there's no waiting period between a Fulbright Specialist Grant and a Fulbright Core Grant. So, for example, what Martha did, or Dr. Davis, a specialist and a core grant, you don't have to wait between those. You just can't do a specialist grant while you're doing activities for a core grant. And between U.S. Scholar Grants, there's a 2-year waiting period from the end date of your last grant to the application deadline of the awards that you're applying to. If you have a specific situation with this that you'd like to discuss, you can email us, and we'll provide that information at the end of the webinar. This will also all be emailed to you, so you don't have to worry about, you know, having to furiously write everything down. We'll be sending the information along. But specific situations, please do email us. So moving right along, just talking a bit about these specific awards to Nordic and including the Netherlands, so Northern Europe countries. So Iceland, we have a lot of exciting awards to Iceland. I just want to highlight a few of them in particular. So one of the new ones we have this year is the Iceland-Greece Joint Award on Economic Crisis Management. This is a 6-month grant, so it's 3 months in Iceland, 3 months in Greece. So it's a research on the country response, and scholars are welcome to affiliate with any university, and it also can be interdisciplinary. I think this is a really exciting new award, very timely. I also want to highlight the Fulbright National Science Foundation Scholar in Cybersecurity and, in Cybersecurity and Critical Infrastructure. These grants are for fall or spring semester. There's the possibility for a full academic year. You can affiliate with any applicable Icelandic university, but also very timely with this cybersecurity and critical infrastructure theme. There are a number of awards throughout Europe, not just in the Nordic region, that have a cybersecurity focus. So if that is your field, I would definitely encourage you to take a look at the opportunities in Europe and sort of figure out which country is the best fit for your interests. And then the last one I just want to highlight for Iceland, and we have the full list up here, and you can also go to our awards catalog, which is at awards.cies.org. But the last one I want to highlight is the National Science Foundation Arctic Research Grant. So it's for 3 to 12 months. You can affiliate with any university, research organization, or appropriate partner. It's open to social and natural science fields as they relate to the Arctic and the people living there. So that's very specific to Iceland. Often, just so you know, when you see that dash with an organization such as the National Science Foundation or a university after it, that usually means it's partnered with that. So that award description will likely have a contact person in the award description that you can reach out to and sort of build that collaboration as you prepare your application. And that sort of leads into the letter of invitation that you may need to collect if it's required or encouraged. So that's sort of how you start to build that. We'll move right along to Finland, so farther east. So I just want to highlight we have a number of awards. So you'll see here on the screen what I was talking about, the Fulbright-University of Turku or Fulbright-University of Vaasa Scholar Award. Please excuse my pronunciation of some of these words. So just to highlight, most awards or most countries will have an all-disciplines award. So you can see that, the first one listed. So it's 4 to 9 months, mostly 4 to 5 months. So you can teach, and you can teach or do research. There is not a research-only grant available in the all-disciplines category. There also is a flex grant available for 3 of these awards, as you can see on the screen. We'll talk about flex grants later, but that allows for a bit more flexibility. You can do concurrent segments. So let's say you want to do a 3-month grant. You can do 1 month at a time over the course of however many years or months. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later. But just so you know that these awards do exist in Finland. I just want to quickly highlight a couple more. So the University of Turku Scholar Award. That's 3 to 12 months. You can conduct research or teach or do both. So that's sort of an example of where you can do research only or you can do research and teach. If you are thinking about that research-teaching divide for one of these awards, that's great, but make sure in your project statement to sort of outline what that divide will be. It does not have to be 50-50, depending on the award description, but we do like to see in applications that it's shown how much teaching you're intending to do versus research. So in the last one for Finland that I just want to talk about briefly is the University of Vaasa Scholar Award. That's 3 to 12 months research with some lecturing at the graduate or doctoral level. Some fields that are applicable for this are accounting and finance, management, marketing, communication, and technology and innovation. So that has a little bit more of a specialty. And you can see that all in the award catalog, but do definitely pay attention to those specializations. So we're going to move right along to Norway. We're not exactly going in a geographical order here, but that's okay. So we have a number of awards. They're all, for Norway, they are very different, and I think that's a very interesting part. So we have this Advanced International Studies at the Nobel Institute Award. It's 3 months, and you would work and live in Oslo to teach international studies. There's a different theme every year for this award, and this year it's Peace and the Future of Multilateralism. You can propose specific and general approaches to disarmament and arms control, along with the societal conditions for peace and ongoing peace processes. So that's a little bit open, but definitely a specific award, and if that is your field, would welcome you to check it out. Again, that's just something that's a very specific situation, and you know, if that is your field, you might want to look at that one rather than an all-disciplines award. We also have the Fulbright Arctic Share, so that's 3 to 4 months. The start date's flexible. You'd have to agree with your host institution before you apply. It's not limited to the natural sciences, so it can be really any discipline that's highlighted in the award description, but you can be creative here. It's not just science. then the last one I want to highlight for Norway is the Roving Scholar in American Studies Award. This is maybe my personal favorite award in the whole catalog, but it's for teachers. So if you are people with teaching experience, people with education experience, so for 10 months, this person will make 1-10 visits to secondary schools and educator conferences to give information on important issues to American society. So this person's based in Oslo, but they travel throughout the country, and the Fulbright Commission in Norway pays for that. So they only want applications in American history, American literature, American studies, and education. It's just a very unique award, and I think it's a really interesting opportunity to see a lot of Norway, not just the capital city. So you're traveling a lot. It's from what I've heard from alumni, a pretty encompassing experience. You're pretty busy, but it's extremely rewarding because you do get to go into those schools. Sweden. So Sweden, I think we listed all the awards on the PowerPoint. Just a couple I want to highlight. So the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Alternative Energy Technology. So that's 4.5 months or 9 months, but the 9 months is preferred. At Chalmers University of Technology. It's in Gothenburg. Again, apologies for the pronunciation. But you can teach, collaborate on research, and assist in establishing networking opportunities and exchanges. All that they're looking for are applications in chemistry, computer science, engineering, environmental studies, and physics and astronomy. So that's, again, very specialized. But if that is your field, that might be a really strong fit. And I believe, I haven't looked at that award description in a bit, but I believe that there is someone listed at the university for a prospective applicant to contact. And then the other one, I think this is the award that Martha Davis received. So the Fulbright Lund University Chair in Public International Law. So that's 4.5 months or 9 months, and the 9 months is preferred at the Raoul Wallenberg Institute of Human Rights and Humanitarian Law. And they're associated, I believe, with Lund University. The selected scholar will teach master's level in human rights, international law, international organizations, civil and political rights, humanitarian law, refugee law, minority and indigenous rights, and international labor standards. So a very specific award again. Sweden does have the All Disciplines Award if none of this resonates with you. But and Martha will talk a bit more about that. But it's a very specific award, but I know we always have some very strong scholars who enjoy that affiliation. So moving to Denmark, some fewer options here, but still really strong options. So the All Disciplines Award, it's just one semester. It must start in September or February 2020 or 2021 at any applicable institution. Again, that's really open. And if you have any questions about that, you can let us know. But there's also the Danish Distinguished Chair in American Studies. You can teach for 4 or 10 months. You must start in August 2020 for a full year, or August or January for one semester, and it's at the University of Southern Denmark. And this is, again, very specialized, but looking for applications in American history, American literature, American studies, with specializations in popular culture, politics, economics, and business history. So if that fits what you do, that might be a good bet rather than the All Disciplines Award, but again, up to you, but certainly a very strong option. And then the Netherlands, which we know is not necessarily a Nordic country, but we're including it in here just because it is in Northern Europe, and we think that these awards are pretty interesting. So again, it's sort of similar to Denmark in that there's an All Disciplines Award and then an American Culture Award. So the All Disciplines, this is an interesting one, the All Disciplines Award. I said before that teaching and research does not necessarily need to be 50-50. For the Netherlands, it does need to be split 50-50. So in a potential project statement, you would want to say how you would split those activities 50-50 just to show that you are, you know, fitting. We look for the best fit possible to that award description. So you can affiliate with any institution in Denmark or in the Netherlands for what's reasonable in all disciplines. And then also there's a senior professorship in American culture. So it's 4 months You can teach or teach and research. And again, teaching and research should be split 50-50. Preferences are given to applicants affiliated with the School of Letters or School of Culture. So they should offer at least one course to graduate students in their field of expertise. So this is a little bit more open, but the award description will give a lot more detail. So if that seems something that's interesting to you, I would say to read that award description very carefully. And I think on the screen right now, you can see what our award, our catalog of awards looks like. So you could just search. It's a pretty user-friendly system, just searching for that region, the country, and the discipline. And there's also an option for an advanced search, which makes things a little bit easier. So in just 1 minute, we'll have Dr. Martha Davis come on the phone from Northeastern. As I said, she was the Fulbright Distinguished Chair in Human Rights and Humanitarian Law. And she's going to tell us a bit about her experience in Sweden, such as how she selected Sweden, how she selected her host institution. I guess in this case it was sort of decided for her, talking about her interactions with the Fulbright Commission in that country. And then just general advice about her time there to help give you some insight into the scholar experience. So just give us 1 moment. Martha, are you with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Can everyone raise their hand in the box to make sure you can hear Martha? Okay, great. Martha, go for it, and let me know.
Okay. Okay, so, go ahead. Thank you very much. You ready?
You're welcome. Yep.
Okay, good. So I'm really happy to have a chance to talk about my experience in Lund 1 year from 2015-2016, and then as the organizer said, I continued my work with the Institute and with Lund University there, subsequently as a Fulbright specialist, with a Fulbright specialist grant. So overall, it was a fantastic experience. I know talking to many of my friends, a lot of people, you know, it's a big process that you go through thinking about whether or not to apply for something like this. You know, and I just went for it, and it was really wonderful. I took my family. We went for an entire year, not just 6 months or 3 months, and found really that after being there for 3 months, that's when we kind of stopped being tourists and really were able to really, you know, appreciate some of the different cultural differences and so on much more than when we were there for a short time. I was affiliated with Lund University and then with the Ralph Oliberg Institute of Human Rights. I taught only one class, short class for graduate students. I advised a lot of students in their academic work. I'm a lawyer, so I got involved in some of the law students' clinical practice and assisting them with that. So even though the teaching was very limited, I had a lot of contact with the master's students and also with the law students there. I was also, really encouraged and invited to get involved in the human rights work at the Institute, which I was really very happy to do. I had my own research to do, too, but it was of great interest to me to get involved in some of the on-the-ground work that the Institute was involved in. So at the same time as doing that, I got a chance to develop my own work on local human rights implementation, and particularly I was looking at water access and Sweden's Roma population. And then I got very involved with the Institute doing some joint projects involving human rights cities, which is what I continued working on during my specialist time. Let me say a little bit about the practicalities. And I think this is true. I'm sure this is true for the Netherlands and for Norway and Denmark. I'm not so familiar with Finland, but in Sweden, English is completely, completely fine in academic settings, and most of my colleagues spoke English better, you know, than a native speaker, you know, in terms of knowing idioms and everything. It was quite, humbling as an American who, you know, like many Americans, has very limited language capacities. Language issues only arose a few times when I was conducting interviews outside of major population areas, and even then people could speak English, but they maybe weren't completely fluent. And then, you know, I just used Google Translate a lot when I was dealing with documents. I also was able to find a colleague, a co-author for one of the things I was working on who was a native Swedish speaker, and so she and I worked together on the if there was a translation issue. I was in Lund, which is in the far southern part of Sweden. It's actually only about half an hour, 40 minutes from Copenhagen. So that was really the metropolitan area that we would gravitate towards, that in Malmo, Sweden. We were about 4 hours from Stockholm, so we had very easy access to Stockholm, but spent more time in Copenhagen. Because of the proximity to Copenhagen, we really had easy access to all of Europe. And I gave talks through the Fulbright program. There's a way in which they sponsor Fulbrighters to travel and give talks while they're over there. I gave talks in Italy and Norway, several talks in Germany and Denmark, in the Netherlands, and then I also had a chance to arrange for some of the other Fulbrighters who were in Europe the year I was there to come over to Lund for short academic visits to share their work with people in Sweden. So it was really very easy to take advantage of everything that was going on around us. Personally, as I said, I was there with my two kids. I was on sabbatical, and I know that when I talk to people about considering a Fulbright, one issue is financial. I don't know about the other countries, but Sweden does offer, relatively generous stipends for many of the positions, certainly for the distinguished chair positions. And and really, live, people have probably read studies saying that how happy people are in Denmark and Sweden and Norway, and you could see why, because the day-to-day costs, and sort of stress was really different than in Boston. So, I live in Boston. Boston has pretty high standard of living or high costs, and the day-to-day costs in Sweden were really comparable to Boston, so I didn't have any kind of sticker shock. And then there were a lot of subsidies for things that in Boston I would be paying full price for, so after-school care for my kids, health care, other kinds of programs like that were all subsidized, and so it ended up being quite reasonable financially for me to go there and stay for a year with my family. Another concern that people often mention when they think about Northern Europe, I think, is the cold and the darkness. And at least where I was, which is very southern Sweden, it was really very, very similar to Boston. There wasn't, a period where we were really suffering, in the dark and the cold. And actually, we came to really love the candlelight that, is all around the country when you're around the winter solstice and so on. So it was really wonderful to be there at a time of year when tourism is not so so prevalent, and where we could really interact with people in the community as non-tourists, as people that were there experiencing everything that the Nordic countries have to offer. So that's what I wanted to offer, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I will just add that an upshot of the year, of this wonderful year, was that I have continued to be affiliated with the Raoul Wallenberg Institute. I'm co-editing a book with the executive director of the institute, and then we recently here at Northeastern sponsored a satellite event for the Swedish Human Rights Film Festival that's sponsored by in Lund, and so we've had it's really strengthened ties between Northeastern University and the law school here and Lund University in ways that are very, very valuable to both sides, I think.
Hey, Martha, it's Lauren. I just have a question for you. You talked a bit about your home sabbatical and how you arranged that. Do you have any words of wisdom? A question I get a lot at IIE is, how do I approach my institution with talking about that home, or like if you applying for a sabbatical, all of that. So if you could maybe just talk through that.
Yeah, and of course, I think probably every institution is a little bit different. It was my regular sabbatical, so I was due for a sabbatical. There wasn't any question about that. I had applied originally with a different plan, and because the Fulbright decision-making sometimes takes place pretty late in the spring within an institution, I did have to change my plans, but I had always planned on taking a full year, so that wasn't such a big adjustment. And what it was I just had to they were very, accommodating in terms of just changing what my proposal was. And so at least at my institution, we have an option for a full year at half pay or a half year at full pay. And so I had always planned on taking the half year or the full year with half pay, and I just continued along that path. The other thing was that my position was distinguished chair, and I think that definitely helped as I was negotiating with the institution, because they recognized that it was a an important appointment and were happy to have someone from Northeastern filling that position.
And I think you might have touched on this. And while I'm talking, feel free, everyone, to write in to the box your questions for Dr. Davis. But while people are kind of thinking, I'm kind of wondering, when you first looked at our award catalog, did you already have Sweden in mind? Or were you kind of like, I want to find something that's in my field? Or how did you navigate the awards catalog? What made you choose Sweden?
Yeah. I'll be honest here. You know, as I say, I was planning on going with my children. My children play ice hockey, and so I was really looking for a place where they could continue playing ice hockey, and really it really helped us develop relationships in the community once we got there. So I was looking at Canada, which also has a couple of positions that are human rights related to my field, and Norway, which does, and some other places like that. But I was really trying to think about my whole family and where they would, have a good experience, but also not be completely cut off from the things that they the interests they'd already developed. As it happened, because of the field that I'm in, I already knew a number of people that had the distinguished chair position at Lund, and so that definitely helped as well. I had visited once when a friend of mine had the position and had a chance to give a presentation at Lund and met some of the people there. I'd known another fellow who had the position and was able to talk with him beforehand about applying for it. So that definitely helped out as well. So I guess my hope would be that for people that are listening in on this call, that having a chance to hear from someone who's been there would be encouraging in terms of thinking about applying.
Great. Yeah, I mean, definitely thinking about kids and family is important. We have a couple of questions a couple of the questions focus on how you prepare a competitive application, which I can provide some insight to as well. But as someone who applied, how did you pull together your application materials? What did you focus on most? Maybe, what help did you get on it and all of that?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a few years, so I'll try to think back to it. Of course, the major thing that I was concerned about, because that particular position is a teaching versus teaching and research position, so I was concerned about not going too far in one direction that wouldn't be attractive to them. I think in the end, I proposed a sort of 60-40 kind of thing, or it wasn't 50-50, I don't believe. And I did have, since it was my sabbatical, I wanted to make sure that I was able to get, important research done that I was engaged in and sort of further my research during that year. So I think that was the thing that I worried about the most, and then I developed a proposal that I thought made sense in terms of, that made sense in terms of Sweden, I'd done a lot of work on local human rights. It's an emerging issue in the human rights field, and it was something that I would be able to do in Sweden, look at in Sweden, particularly because the language barrier wasn't so great there. So I knew that I would be able to interview people that I needed to interview, have access to many of the documents that I wanted to look at, and it was also something that would I could take advantage of being in Europe, because it's an issue that is very much on the forefront generally in Europe and Austria and Germany and so on. So those are the things that I thought about. What could I pull together? What in terms of my research would justify my being in Sweden in particular, and where I could really accomplish what I wanted to accomplish?
Great. Yeah, that all makes sense, really finding that good fit. We had one question from the audience about, you mentioned using Google Translate, and although everyone speaks English, when you were translating some of those documents, was Google Translate sufficient, or how did you ever bring in collaborators, or how did you work with that when there was a bit of a language barrier?
Yeah. Mostly when I used Google Translate, it was really to read the local news. And I also took a Swedish class while I was there. And Swedish is not so different, it's not so different from English that I couldn't you know, that I would be completely bamboozled by things. You know, there's some cognates and so on. But for the research that I did, as I said, I ended up finding a collaborator. It worked out just wonderfully well. She was someone who'd already been pursuing some of the same issues that I was looking at, but from a different angle. And she, as it turned out, was both a native English and Swedish speaker. She was Irish and Swedish. And so the two of us, you know, were able to collaborate very well. And so when we were looking at legal documents, for example, those, of course, were all in Swedish, and she did the translations of those. The Google Translate, though, is good for just, you know, eyeballing things and making sure that you're kind of, you know, on the right page with stuff. But then many, many things are in English. So, you know, it really ended up, I guess that using the translation services probably slowed me down somewhat. But I didn't feel that that there were any barriers that I couldn't overcome.
Right, yeah, and I can add to that a little bit. When you are crafting your application, especially to when you're looking to do some analysis or look in some archives and there is another language that you have to work with, I will say our peer review committee, when they review the applications, you don't want there to be any questions. So in your application, if it does seem like you might need language abilities and you don't have that, that's not necessarily a good thing. You really want to show how your research is feasible or your teaching. But feasibility is really important. So when you're crafting your application, if you do feel like you need those language abilities, it probably would be a good idea in your project statement to state perhaps the collaborator that you've already set up or how you'll manage that. So that's sort of part of being culturally adaptable and all of that. But that should really be in your project statement.
I will say that at the Royal Vollenberg Institute, because it works worldwide, English is the working language in the Institute, and I was surprised myself to find out that that's even the case when Danes and Swedes and Norwegians and Icelanders, whatever, are all together, is that they aren't really able to communicate in their own languages, so they all speak English. So that, you know, the workplace was absolutely negotiable as an English speaker.
Right. So we just like a few more, if you have a couple more minutes, but we have maybe two more questions, and then I'll continue the presentation, and we'll let Martha get back to Boston things. But someone had a question just about, you know, enrolling your children in school, and was it easy, and did they like it? And maybe that's a personal question, but you can let me experience how your kids were.
I'm happy to talk about it. I mean, I don't know about other parts of Sweden, but I suspect that there are some similarities. In Lund, it's an international community. Lund University draws people from around the world. And so there are several, at least two, when I was there, public Swedish schools where English language is the primary language. So some people, I know that some of the Fulbrighters in the north put their kids in sort of an Swedish immersion. But my kids were a little older, and that wasn't really what they wanted. And so they were able to go into a Swedish curriculum that was all in English. They did have Swedish language instruction a couple times a week, and then as part of the Swedish curriculum, they studied design. So that was fun. They loved the school. There were not formal grades. There was very, very little homework. I understand in Finland there's no homework, but in Sweden there's hardly any. And they were in an international baccalaureate program, which is quite different than what they had back in Boston, and they really, you know, I think enjoyed it. It's very much about creativity and self-motivation and so on. They made a lot of friends from around the world, and really enjoyed the school experience.
Great. Did they find a hockey team?
They did, yeah, and it was excellent. You know, they were, I mean, as you know, just like the stereotype, I guess, of Swedes, it's really true. They were very welcoming. They really taught my younger daughter to skate well. They really spent time with them. It was just very, really wonderful experience in that regard, too. And as I said, having that kind of outside interest, and then actually while I was there, I played in the local university orchestra. You know, both of those things really got us connected to people in a way that was beyond just the academic setting.
Right, and that's also something I like to sort of throw in. I think sometimes, especially I mentioned some NSF-funded Fulbright grants, and I know a lot of people more in the science fields are used to submitting that NSF application, but something that's different about Fulbright is mentioning that cultural immersion and how you're going to connect with your host community. So even when, you know, to the audience here, when you're working on your project statement, including like how you want to engage with that community, aside from your actual Fulbright research or teaching. So Martha, sounds like you did that a lot. And we just have one more question for you. Did you ever travel outside of Sweden to give presentations? And also, you mentioned traveling more for fun to Copenhagen and some other Stockholm, but did you give any presentations outside of your host?
Yes, yes. I think I mentioned, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but there's a program where the Fulbright program will provide a support for that kind of travel. So I was invited to speak twice in Heidelberg and another location in Germany, I'm not remembering now, and in Genoa, Italy, and I traveled to Vienna, traveled to Oslo and to Trondheim in Norway, all sponsored by the Fulbright program and invited by institutions there to speak. And then I also spoke in Denmark. When I was talking about going to Copenhagen, I mean, sometimes we went for fun, but sometimes I went for work too. There's a Danish Human Rights Institute there. I spoke there and, you know, had some colleagues that I was working with there. It was very easy to travel using the Copenhagen airport. And, you know, with my family, I didn't necessarily want to go, you know, away for a week or two, you know, or for more than a couple of days. So it was very easy to go and, you know, give a presentation at these places and then come back, you know, and get back to my duties as a, you know, as a mother. So, so it really was very easy to do. I should say I went to the Netherlands as well. I had a chance to go to a conference there. So, you know, it's very easy to travel around Europe. And even though Sweden's a little bit off the beaten path for some of these things, the proximity to Copenhagen and the international airport there really made it easy. I should say too, just speaking of Stockholm, is that I, developed a number of colleagues in Stockholm who I was working with on my project, and so I traveled there a fair amount for work. And then in addition, the commission, the Fulbright Commission, is based in Stockholm. And so as a Fulbrighter, we got invited to a number of things in Stockholm that were very exciting, the highlight of which is the Nobel Prize ceremony that most years, I think almost every year, Fulbrighters get a chance to attend up in Stockholm. So, so that was a nice side perk, you know, of the chance to be working at the Lund University and the Raoul Wallenberg Institute.
So Martha's talking a little bit about that regional travel grant. I think, at least in Sweden, it depends on the country you're in, but for the most part, for the countries we're talking about, I think that's handled through the commission, or it's, you know, with a host in a different country that you might have to pursue that yourself. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
No, that's right. When I brought people to Lund, I worked with the commission, and then the people who invited me had worked with their commissions.
Right. So, yeah, that's sort of something you have to sort of explore on your own. There is a travel within Europe regional fund that the commissions are probably pulling from, but you do work with the commissions on that. And our commission staff, they're all really supportive. Well, thank you, Dr. Davis. I don't know if there are even any last words of wisdom, but this was great.
No, I'm excited to be able to share with folks who are thinking about this, and I hope that everyone will follow through and do the application.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you. We're going to continue this webinar a little bit, but you're welcome to sign off.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you. All right. So thank you again. That was great. Great insight, I think. I can answer. We've gotten some questions. We've gotten some more questions, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about the actual application that I think will answer most of them. So again, as she said, language requirements, English is usually sufficient. I think we touched on that. You need to know language that, you know, is applicable to your project. So if you're applying to Iceland, and you really want to do archival research, and they're Icelandic-only archives, you need to make a plan as to how you'll work with that and around that and who will help you and how you'll kind of do that. You really just don't want to leave that peer review committee with any questions. That's really the advice I give, is don't leave any mystery in your application. The special features vary by award. Dr. Davis did mention that she went to Stockholm as part of the orientation. Most countries do have something similar to that. I know in Norway and I know Finland, you would go to, you know, an orientation or a mid-year conference. So all of that is possible. So depending on the Fulbright, I did mention Flex. There's several awards to Finland that offer Flex grants. If you are thinking about a Flex grant, definitely email us. We'll give the email address at the end. But in your project statement, it's very, very helpful to have a table or a clear outline in your project statement with the dates and what you anticipate on completing during each segment. So if you want to propose 1 month over the course of 2 years, so maybe you do 1 month in the fall, 1 month in the spring, and 1 month the next fall, you really want to say why this is necessary for your project. Maybe you're measuring an impact over time or something like that, and also what you'll do in that 1 month. Just really showing that rationale for why Flex works uniquely well for your project. We understand that, you know, maybe you're not offered sabbatical or there's situations, and usually that's not necessarily the reason only to pursue Flex, just because of your sabbatical situation or time off. It really should fit your project. And we can provide more information on that if you email us. There was a question that talked about are there awards for earlier career scholars? Because we have talked a lot about more distinguished awards, or distinguished chair awards, I should say. But we do have postdoctoral awards, and those usually mean 5 years since your PhD. So it's not a postdoc in terms of what you think in academia, postdoc meaning 5 years since your PhD. We have a number of those awards, and using our award catalog, you can filter for those early career awards. There's a lot of options, and if you have a specific situation with that, please do email us, and we can take a look at your CV and see sort of what would be a good fit. I've got a question about language again. So just to go back, someone's wondering if it's a strength to have that language component. If you do speak that language, it's absolutely something to note in your application. It's a great connection to that country. And also, you know, you might want to talk about how your language skills in your project statement, how your language skills can help you connect with that community more. Because again, Fulbright's not just focusing only on your project, it's also connecting with that host. Yes, if you have the language skills, absolutely point that out. You don't have to have a home university affiliation. You can be an independent scholar. You can be an artist. You can be professional. That's all fine. So we have application resources. We'll be sending information along. So these are just all links. Our catalog of awards is really where you want to start, because that lists all of our awards applications. I'll also highlight the review criteria. This is what our peer review committee uses to look at the awards. Our peer review committees in Washington, D.C. meet by discipline. So if someone in your discipline is reading your application, however, I would recommend someone outside your discipline, perhaps a peer at your university who's not in your department, should read your application just so it's understandable to someone. You know, we might have a chemistry discipline committee, but we might not have a very specialized type of chemistry committee. So you want that to be understandable to, you know, your average audience. And then if you are recommended, your application is sent to the in-country review, and they don't do it by discipline. So that's, again, another reason. They don't always do it by discipline. So that's another reason that you want your application to be very readable and understandable by everybody, really. Of course, you can get into some specifics and show that your research is rigorous and all of that. So moving along, so application components, again, this is really getting down to the nitty-gritty of the application. The thing, if it's a research award, you need a bibliography. If there's a teaching component, you'll need a syllabi or syllabus as well. We recommend that you do kind of craft that syllabi to the award, but you're welcome to modify something you've already taught. It's just to show that you've put some thought into how you would teach this to a maybe slightly different audience. If you are in sort of a more creative field, there is a requirement for supplemental materials. I will say, so the letter of invitation, I don't know if that's the next slide. So we've talked a lot about the project statement. I'm not going to go too far into this. But again, talking about how feasible your project is, and also just the fit. So I think Dr. Davis talked a lot as to why Sweden was a strong fit and why that host was a strong fit for her. So that's something you definitely need to think about, and also just thinking about Fulbright and what's Fulbright's mission. Fulbright's mission is to connect people of different backgrounds, sort of just making the world a bit more interconnected. So thinking a lot about your cultural adaptability. That's something that I think a lot of award applications don't necessarily have, but that cultural ambassadorship piece is fundamental to the Fulbright program. So it's great if you find that perfect fit award, but you also do want to talk about how you will engage with your host, whether it be through iTalki or otherwise. So this letter of invitation, gotten a lot of questions. If it says, some awards will say that it's optional. If it's optional and you can contact that collaborator, it's always good to have one. If it's optional and you don't include one, your application will still move forward to our peer review, but you know, if you can get one, you should, and I would start on that soon. I know it's April, and it seems really early, but again, Finland, for example, closes for all of July. A lot of other places in Europe are closed in August. You really want to get that conversation rolling before people go on summer vacation, and I really can't stress that enough. I know it seems early. The application deadline is not till mid-September, but don't procrastinate at least that part. You want to start making those connections for that letter of invitation now. And the ways you would solicit that invitation letter, again, a lot of the awards have a name in the award description, or you can, it might have a name for the commission, so you might be able to reach out to the commission and ask for tips. There's a lot of different ways, and we're happy to talk that through if you email us, but really starting by who you know. Maybe there's someone at your university who was a Fulbright alumni in the past, maybe at that in that country, but you can always talk to people at your host or your home institution about how they went through that. And again, this letter of invitation is non-binding, so it's not a contract by any means. Oops. I clicked something. 1 minute. Thank you. So the review process, I touched on it briefly. The application deadline's in September. We meet between September and early November in our peer review in Washington, D.C. Certain applications are forwarded ahead. They're recommended to the in-country review. If you're not recommended from there, well, we send people notification whether or not they've been recommended. If you're not recommended, the process stops. You're done. But if you are recommended, that process goes to the in-country review, and the in-country review decisions can really come at any time, and IIE isn't really privy to those conversations, and I think part of that's intentionally, just for the in-country review to sort of determine their own priorities. So if you email us and ask, where's my award decision, we don't actually know. It's coming soon, sometime in the spring. And I know that can get very complicated with sabbaticals and planning, but unfortunately, they'll come when they will. They'll get here eventually. Usually the countries I'm talking about pretty early, but it depends from year to year. So you'll be notified by, I know most of Europe, I'll say, has already gone out for this current year, but, you know, it depends year to year. Connecting with the Fulbright program on social media. We have very active social media accounts, both Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I had someone the other day tell me if he would be looked at unfavorably if you did not use social media. No, that's fine, but we do encourage you to interact with our social media accounts. You can also refer your colleagues if you think anything in here resonated with something your colleague's working on. We have a referral initiative where you can kind of type in their information and we'll reach out. That's, again, not an endorsement or anything. It's just you seem like you might be interested in this. So we're done with that slideshow. Back to the first. So I'm going to answer just quickly. We have a few more minutes, 5 to 10 more minutes. So the letter of invitation should probably be on a letterhead. It doesn't need to be written out to anyone in particular. It could be to whom it may concern or Dear Fulbright Committee, just as long as it's on that letterhead. And it shouldn't just say, or in a ideal scenario, it won't just say, we wish to welcome this person. We will provide office space. I mean, that's great, but, that's, it should be a little bit more substantial. The person who's writing it should be familiar with your project, and it should be clear that there's been some conversations happening. And it's always good. Usually you want to focus on one letter of invitation to one host institution. If you're looking to affiliate with two, I've seen that before, but you really need to draw out in your project statement how you would divide your time. It's really likely that you would probably only affiliate with one. If there is two, then that's up to you. You can only apply to one award, and there's a lot of questions coming in. Can there be multiple letters from the same institution? It depends on the situation. You might want to email us about that, and I don't know if our email address was actually included in this presentation, which is okay, but it's europeeurasia@iie.org, so that's Europe, Eurasia, just how it sounds, at IIE.org. So we're going to send out a message once this is done with the recording of this webinar, and that'll have our email address on it. So you can reach out to us from there as well. So, one award, pick the one that's the best fit for you. We'll send this presentation. I'm seeing a few questions about applications in music and creative arts. Those all disciplines awards, open to mostly any discipline. You really have to read through the award description. We do have a number of awards in Europe that are for music or focusing on the creative arts. You can do an advanced search or a keyword search in our award catalog. And if you're having trouble kind of figuring that out, feel free to give us a call or email us. Also, the email addresses are all in each award description. You can find a person to reach out to, and it's europeeurasia@iie.org. So we have some questions about housing. Is it typical for the host to help find housing? It depends on the host. It depends on the award. It depends on the country. Usually, you will have to find your housing. The commission in that country, for example, for Fulbright Sweden, the Swedish commission might be able to provide some guidance. It really depends. And also, you can always, it always depends on, you can always ask someone who had an award before you, or they can connect you to that person. 1 minute. So again, if you've applied before, I would just continue to enhance your application. You can definitely give us a call or email us, and we're happy to set up a phone consultation with you. Again, sometimes you're forwarded along to the in-country review, and maybe your discipline is just not a priority that year for them. My suggestion is to just keep applying. And also, you might want to talk to your host a bit more and see if maybe your host can write a letter of invitation that's perhaps very specific, really outlining the need. And also, I will say something that a lot of applicants should focus on is impact. So not just the impact on your host, but what impact you'll bring home with you. So once you're done with your grant, Fulbright doesn't end there. You go back to your home institution. How are you going to bring your lessons learned back home? And that's something that I think is sometimes lost in project statements, just how will you bring your lessons learned home. So that's something to think about. I can take maybe one more question, and then we're going to have to end the webinar. So if the grant is for teaching, is research still expected? Usually no. If the grant is teaching only, you'll teach. I mean, of course, when you're in country, things come up and you might be asked to do something more, but you should be proposing. If it's teaching only, your project statement should only address teaching. And you never know what will happen in country, but your application should really match that award description. I can take one more. So in American Studies Awards, some of the applicants are literature-based. It really depends on the award. And if you do see an award that says American Studies, I would contact the people listed, contact both IIE and the commission or that contact person at a host and see if that would be a good fit. And I think you can really make that what you wish. If you do consider yourself to be in American Studies, making that sort of connection to what you do and how that would be valuable to the award description. All right, so we have to wrap up here. I know there's a few other questions. I can answer one more. So how competitive is each award? So we don't list our application numbers. The U.S. Student Program does. The Scholar Program doesn't. And that's because our numbers really fluctuate from year to year. We're always adding different awards, adding something that's more specialized, maybe taking away something that was specialized, something like that. I would really just look for that award that's the best fit for you. We're always happy to answer questions. We really want to help you craft a very strong application. So we'll send out the archived webinar and the presentation, and we're always happy to connect with interested applicants. So thank you so much, everybody.